Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the show. It is going to be about a five-minute introduction. We have Albert and John on the line, and Don and Suzette will be calling in. Now, Suzette did send me a new picture. I need new pictures from everybody. So I was thinking the other day, the concept of private property is something that's been disputed and examined since Roman times. But now it's coming more into relevancy because of the fact that we might not be able to travel without a vaccination card. And I started doing an investigation, and I want to do an introduction regarding it. So the Romans debated private property, and I'll just read a brief introduction. And then I want to get to the English era, beginning in the 17th century. One moment, please. In classical Roman law from 1 AD to 250, the sum of rights, privileges, and powers a legal person could have in anything was called a dominion, or back then it was called dominion, ownership, or less frequent, proprietas, through frequently enough to be clear that the two words were synonymous to legal terms. The classic Roman jurists did not say that their system tended to ascribe proprietas to a current possessor of the thing, but I'm going to skip over that. A number of Roman legal rules denied the label possession to the person who was in fact, though not legally, in possession in order to keep the legal possession. Further, the person legally in possession was presumed to be the proprietor, in other words, the property owner. This is clear enough from procedural rules that required a person who was not peaceably in possession of a thing to establish affirmatively that his title to the object was better than the peaceable possessor. Once the Roman had defined the proprietus, it tended to prevent him from conveying anything less than all the rights, privileges, and powers that he had in it. Thus, full use rights from ownership could be given to a living person, and that person could not convey those rights to another. So I'm just talking about the beginning part just to tell you that there was discussion about it in law. In medieval English law, the procedural system prevented any clear distinction between property and obligation. It was not until the abolition of the former action through the 19th century that distinguished between property and obligations in the way the Romans had. It is therefore remarkable that English law prior to the abolition of the forms of the actions at critical junctures to move in directions similar to Roman, namely to agglomerate property rights to a single individual. In England, the notion of property and land emerged at the end of the 12th century from a mass of discretionary feudal rights and obligations. The way in which this happened was complex. But beginning an appellate jurisdiction offered by the king and his court to ensure that a feudal lord did not cheat those who were subordinate to him ended up being the free tenant, being the owner of the land in a quite modern sense. So I just want to fast forward a minute. The reason I brought this topic up is there was a time in Europe where privacy was not really a concept because people were always in servitude to the king. Keep in mind as I read the next two paragraphs. In the 16th century, the process that had operated at the end of the 12th century to consolidate ownership rights in the free tenant system was replicated by a copyholder, the descendants of those who held land by unfreed tenure. The royal courts opened appellate jurisdiction to the copyholders wronged by unjust behaviors of their lords. An end result, the copyholder became owner of what had been the lord's land in the eyes of the law. In other words, there was the establishment of private property. Once again, the lord's right in the land was reduced to the receipt of money payments. So now I just want to skip on to this one theorist. Just a second. Beginning in the 17th century, developments in property law both in England and on the continent can be related to the development of speculative jurisprudence. General speculation about the nature of property is as old as Plato. Although property is considered sometimes critically in the writings of the Church of Latin West and medieval theologians, these writings had relatively little direct on secular law. In the earliest century of the 17th century, a Dutch jurist named Hugo Grotius announced the theory of eminent domain. On one hand, according to Grotius, the state did have the power to expropriate private property. On the other hand, it had to be for a public person and had to be accompanied by the payment of just compensation to the individual whose property was taken. The idea was not original, but Grotius stated in such a way that it became a commonplace in Western political thought. So basically, let me just read a couple more sentences. In the late 17th century, the German jurist Samuel von Pufendorf refined a theory of origins of property rights that had been in existence since ancient times. Property, Pufendorf said, is founded in the physical power manifested in seizing the object of property, the occupation of it, in order, however, to convert the fact of physical power into a right, the sanction of the state is necessary. But the state cannot itself seem to suggest make a property right where physical possession is not present. Thus, both occupation and state sanction are necessary conditions for the legitimacy of property. This has to do also with, so what this Pufendorf was saying is that the state has to legitimize the property rights, but my Jamaican friend Claire used to say possession is 9/10 of the law. So now I'm going to fast forward into the 21st century and play this clip. One moment, please. I have to refresh it. Of course, it's what I'm trying to say in this little snippet is, how much do we owe to the government? How much do we get to keep for ourselves? Where can the line be drawn? So I'm gonna
now from the Supreme Court, and the senior fellow at the Cato Institute, Ilya, explain what the implications are and why the court came to this conclusion.
Well, the court explicitly says that this is a narrow opinion, meaning limited to cell site location data only.
One moment, it's going to clear up. I'm sorry, it has to refresh. So what I was talking about, the concept of private property, I want you guys to consider these questions before I pull you in. How much service do we owe directly to the community? How much privacy can we keep to ourselves? Are we born on the earth to serve a common cause? Are we born to serve ourselves? So now I have to replay it because the ads are popping up. Hold on. Dead air.
So we have a new Supreme Court decision. This time the Supreme Court decided that police need search warrants in order to take information from a criminal suspect's cell phone. Ilya Shapiro joins me now from the Supreme Court, the senior fellow at the Cato Institute. Ilya, explain what the implications are and why the court came to this conclusion.
Well, the court explicitly says that this is a narrow opinion, meaning limited to cell site location data only, not any other future kind of technologies or any applications in the national security sphere. Just that the police do need a warrant to get information from Verizon, Sprint, T-Mobile, whoever your cell phone provider is, to get that data about where you've been, which towers you're hanging off of, based on kind of a complicated collection of factors, your interest in the privacy of your data that you can't really disconnect from the network in the modern world without turning your phone off or taking the battery out. So this is you do have some expectation of privacy in that sense. But again, this is a big deal for police work in terms of locating that cell site data, but doesn't have broader applications on other types of technology or uses outside of the law enforcement realm.
Over the past few years, the courts have been grappling with particularly how to deal with the information that's on a cell phone. Once upon a time, when there were no cell phone flags, you know, you got pulled over, and maybe the officer might search through your bag if they had a reason, and they might find a piece of paper. But now with cell phones, you need a password. It's way more complicated, but there's also a lot more information that law enforcement can get.
Yeah, they're trying to analogize to the Fourth Amendment's text, which protects people, houses, personal effects. And so if you have your entire photo album stored on your phone effectively along with your bank records and your correspondence, I mean, that's more than rifling through somebody's house. So it raises all sorts of concerns of property, privacy, and property, although some of the dissenting justices here, and there were four separate dissents.
I'm going to stop there and pull the host in. So basically what I'm trying to say is I also read further that the only way they can immediately take your cell phone is if you're a suspect in a child-related crimes, like exploiting children, things of that nature. So I'm trying to pop to my radio page. I'm having a few technical issues tonight. And I do have my radio page up, and I'm going to be pulling in the co-host.
Hi, John. How's it going tonight?
I'm doing well. I am property of the state, and the state has allowed me the freedom to talk on your show tonight.
That's good. I'm going to try not to restrict anybody tonight. Now, we are going to talk about the main topic the first 15 minutes, and just so we can have some fluidness. And Don and Suzette are supposed to call in, too. Hi, Albert. How's it going tonight?
Hey, how's it going tonight? I was going to say basically the same thing you said. Hey, what's up? There we go. I'm pretty good. I would like to start about that, you know, and continue on and add to that. Am I ready to go?
Yeah, basically the reason I brought it up is because I just want to give a – John has been talking about how he feels like right to privacy. Whoever has that, I'm going to try to mute. It's actually my echo, but go ahead, because my phone's having trouble right now.
Yeah, you keep on breaking up. Sometimes I can't hear you. But anyways, in terms of private property, I mean, some people can have a large amount of private property. You can stretch out, even circle around you, or even hit some parts of a park where you think you're in a public park, but you're actually in somebody's private property. Literally, even if you wanted to live off the grid, and live off of nature, you know, like the plants, animals, and the water rivers, people like, you know, T-Bone Pickens and some other, you know, millionaires and billionaires can hide a large amount of property, can take up even not just the land, but riverbeds, lakes and riverbeds, right? And so, which means that if you wanted to live off the land and, you know, live like an Indian and, you know, the air is free, you just, you know, live off the land somehow, you don't own nothing. Yeah, you could be somebody's private property drinking their water from the riverbed, you know what I mean, and stuff like that, and you know, and be kicked out. And so if their property is so large.
Are you trying to say if you're living outside?
If you wanted to live off the grid and live outside, you know, basically camp it, be like a, you know, like a, you know, one of those, you know, survivalist that lives off the grid with no modern technologies, just living off the grid, you know what I mean? In some places you wouldn't be able to do that because some people's private properties are so large and widen and expand, that you can't go into the riverbeds or collect off of nature, right, from the trees and stuff like that. They own all of that. You can't, right? And if you're in somebody's private property, they're in the law, within the law, to shoot you. So even if you step on their grass and they're private to 10-15 miles wide, you can literally be in their property and they're within the right to shoot you and kill you. And there's no way for you to even know if you're in their property because it could be so large. Private properties can be really large. If you have large private properties and you have a lot of money, you could defend yourself. But if you have small private...
I have a question for you.
It's not so much like if you live next to someone like who owned a plantation or large estate in the TV show Dallas. The question is how much in the old days when everybody was in a feudal system and everybody had to serve the lord or the king, and then as English established more rights for the individual and private property became a concept, and now we have cell phones that all our information is stored on there, like our bank accounts, our social media, the way we pay bills, and if you get pulled over, what the popo can take from you. And the Supreme Court ruled in June of 2018 that they cannot seize your phone without a court order. So
well,
I guess my concept is, do you feel like if your property or your privacy rights are being infringed upon? That was the question.
Everything can be taken away from you. It's called civil forfeiture. So the police can pull you over, take over your car, and police can also take your house and your private and so-called your private property. The police can take it all away from you using civil forfeiture, because if they believe that your private property was somehow some drugs or whatnot, then your private property can be automatically guilty until proven innocent, which means the people are innocent until proven guilty, which that kind of varies because it's not really, some people get hold for quite a while even so. But anyways, so yeah, people are innocent unless proven guilty. But your private property, your car, your houses, or, just your stuff, right? That's guilty unless proven innocent under civil forfeiture, so cops can take it away. And of course, eminent domain are used by large companies, particularly oil companies that like to dig oil underneath people's houses. They like to use that. Cops use civil forfeiture, and big businesses use eminent domain to take your property. So either way, there's many ways you can lose your property. And here's a very interesting fact how some other people lost their property.
Okay.
Back in
Albert?
1940, I'm almost finished. It won't be too long.
A couple of years ago, we did a whole show on civil forfeiture. I don't know if you remember that, but go ahead. I remember you talking about
it's
it.
Just,
but
oh, yeah.
It is
just yeah, just a quick mention. Just a quick mention. That was it. But anyways, back in 1942 and 1945, during World War II, when Japan and America was at war, anyways, law-abiding Japanese law-abiding citizens, with citizenships and green cards, law-abiding citizens, Japanese that lived in the United States back in 1942 to 1945, were taken away from their homes and put into internment camps. And for a couple of years or so, and basically they kind of, some of them even lost their properties. So that's another way you can lose your properties. And they not only lost their properties, they lost their freedom for some amount of time until they were finally released. They basically got their freedom taken away from them besides their private property.
I remember that, and John and I are from the generation where We saw movies about it. Dennis Quaid starred in a movie. It was called The Japanese Internment Camps. I'm very familiar with it. It's very tragic. And I think the conclusion at that point can be that really it doesn't matter what the law is. The cops can take it. The police state could take advantage of anybody if they really wanted to. So with that, I'm going to transfer to John before Don calls in. So, John, what do you think of the show so far?
Well, so far it touches on what's happening in the whole world. And there are two things to that point. The COVID has, or the fake virus, pandemic, not that, that it isn't a virus, not that people aren't dying from it, but to the level that it's being purported to be, that it's the end-all, do-all of the planet. With the COVID, what they've done is people who are having distress, financial distress because of their employment situation, maybe they can't work because of the pandemic. What happens is the government's made it these rules where they don't have to pay the rent temporarily, or they pay the balance at the end of a certain amount of time. You have landlords, interesting choice of words, like their lord, like their god, land gods, can't get their rent money from people that are living on their property that they paid money to own and to rent out. And so people basically squatting on the property. And it's a weird thing because they can't work because the government's not allowing them to, and then they can't pay the landlord, and the landlord can't get their money because the government won't let them. We're talking, governors of states, they're making these rules. And so that's kind of a kick in the ass to the landlords who had ownership of property for so many years, and right now they're in a situation they can't evict people. They're trying to, and they're struggling. But to a bigger point, we are living in an illusion of freedom, an illusion that we own our property. You think about it. You go to work and just count the time from when you get up and get ready to go to work to the time you walk through the door, throw your keys on the table, and say, I've had a day. For a lot of us, it's 10 hours or 11 hours, depending on your commute. I mean, you're going to work there 8 hours, but you got to have your lunch break to subtract. You got to have your travel time, which for most of us is going to be at least half an hour to and from, like an hour total. Because you have to walk to the car. You have to warm up the car. You have to get in the parking lot. You have to exit the parking lot. There's so many different, and that's not if you stop off after work to get food or to get gas or whatever it is. So, when you really, like for me, about 1:15 in the morning, I'm getting up and I'm going to work. And by the time I escape work and get back home, it's like 11:15. That's like 10 hours of my day. But you got to sleep, right? Now, sometimes I'm getting 1 or 2, 3 hours of sleep, but for most people, 6 to 8 hours of sleep. To add that to the ticket, now you're talking 16 to 18 hours. That's not even making your dinner, your breakfast, or taking a shower. When you start to factor in all those things, how much time do you have to your own self, to your brain, right? We're talking 20 hours or so are already taken out, and you're maybe left with 2 to 4 hours of free thought. You own your time or what you want to do. And then you factor in a girlfriend or a husband or kids or a dog, and you might end up with 5 minutes to yourself or half an hour.
Okay, I have a question.
Go
for it. You said that some governments are not allowing people to work, but on the other hand, I know people who get to work at home the last year, and they've
and
saved
I would like to
hundreds
add
of dollars.
To private
Wait,
property.
Just a minute. They saved. Yeah, just hold on a minute. They've
sure.
saved hundreds of dollars on gas. They get to eat at home. They only have to sneak to the grocery store once a week. But some people can't work because their business is temporarily closed. Now, somebody told me on this show a few weeks ago that people are landlords for the rent that the residents don't pay, but I don't know if that's true. Does anybody know the answer to that?
What was the question? Because you were breaking up.
I got to get back on my land phone. My land phone was out of commission due to a problem. So you guys talk until I come back.
Okay, for sure. Oh, yeah, and about private property, another thing, too, you know, even if you completely own your private property, you still have to pay taxes every year. And guess what? If you don't pay your taxes for your private property, it could be taken away right underneath you without you even knowing it when it gets taken away from you. Some people have lost their private property without even knowing they lost their private property. And they'll take it, they'll pull it underneath the rug from you and sell it to somebody else. And somebody else can already bought it without even you knowing. You know, sometimes there's no warnings or nothing like that. So it's very important that if you own private property, to pay your taxes, because they can just take it away from you just like that.
It happens, and I would say not that frequently, but they do have – I have a friend hanging out with it. She lost her property that way. They had HOA, Homeowners Association fees, and through a tragedy, the husband died, and the wife taking over wasn't used to business or how business works, wasn't paying her association fees. And I'm sure there were some more complications than what I was told, but basically the HOA said, you owe this money, put a lien on the property. Somehow they went through legal process and seized the property. And we're talking like, you know, $500,000 to $1 million worth of prime, you know, Brentwood property. And if you don't have the right lawyer, what happened is they didn't do the due diligence of like, let's get a lawyer, let's find out all my rights. So by the time they took action with a lawyer, it had already gone through, I don't know, what do you call it, probate, or death.
Well, here's the problem with that.
The selling the property and taking possession of it.
Well, yeah, and the problem with that, I remember a lady in Baltimore, a black lady in Baltimore, had a little tiny little apartment that she owned that was her private property. Anyways, she wasn't paying her taxes because at the time she was trying to get her, you know, evaluated, because her taxes on her private property were actually 10 times higher than the value that it should have been. So she was paying way too much for taxes, and the government, the governor never fixed that. It never, you know, sometimes when houses get evaluated for their private, you know, to pay their taxes for the private, can be over evaluated. And she lived in an area, and she was paying the tax for a large area, but she didn't own all the area that she was in. She had an apartment that she owned, but not the whole entire building, all the area, and she was paying all that tax that she should not have been paying, but, you know, and that's why she stopped paying it. And of course, like I said, it was sold right underneath from her, and there's I mean, there was a documentary on how they get paid to literally take people's places away.
There are people that pray. They're professionals, and that is an evil on the planet. To me, now, and that is valid, but I think for most people, having your property taken from you, it's a rare thing. For most of us, you know, I would say probably 95% of us or more never have that happen. But 100% of us face taxes of some kind with property or rent. We have a landlord. And so this illusion of freedom, it's just made up. It's to pacify us to think, oh, you own your property. You know, you don't own your property. Your property owns you. Your employer owns you. And these are things that you go to work. Are you free to pick up your phone and call up your friends and start talking about shoot the breeze or go on the internet and start looking up whatever you want to? well, maybe you have a job where you can kind of sneak in some of that stuff. But as a rule, most of us, if you work at a corporate store or building, you don't. Every moment, I mean, pick up your cell phone, your boss will say, why are you on the phone? You're on the job. You know, you save it for your break. And or who are you talking to? And you have to...
Does that happen where you work?
Oh, all the time. Any job I've worked, whether it was at you worked at Systematic Office Supply. I remember how it is. I mean, if your boss walked in, if the Rosenblums walked in, saw you on the phone just chatting it up, you know, like with the friend, they go, hey, you know, you need to do that on your own time. And so, again, you know, even the job description, right? Customer service, you're serving, you're a servant. That's what half the jobs are, right? You're serving the public. And then think of how it's flipped on us with these government leaders and politicians. They say, oh, I'm a public servant. Oh, really? Really? You live in like a 4 million. You know what? Maxine Waters. You know, if you consider her, she's for the people, because she's against, you know, big corporate. She's against Donald Trump or whoever. She lives like in a $4 million house. Give me a freaking break! A $4 million house. And guess what? A little Hunter lives
in. Is it in South Central?
Hunter lives in a $5 million house in Venice, working for Daddy. How did Hunter afford a $4 million house in Venice, or $5 million? Public servant, really flying people flying in jets. Even Ocasio-Cortez, you know, gets her clothes custom. You know, lives in her, I don't know, $3,000 a month place or whatever in D.C. Public servant, my ass. It's just a joke. It's an illusion. And so the point of what I'm saying is, you know, Jane was talking
about... My job at FedEx, I feel like an Egyptian slave in the Bible.
Oh, yeah.
It's such a hard job.
Let's take the point you mentioned. Well, you can work at home and you can do stuff online. What about that? They're tracking everything you say, everything you do. They're controlling. You're surveilled. I had a friend who was working, transporting people with health conditions. So it was like a medical. And she wasn't, you know, when she was driving, she put her mask down, like, so she could breathe. And what happens when she, you know, at the end of the shift, supervisor says, I was watching our camcorder, because they have a cam on them, and they're driving, you know, your mask is down. You got to keep your mask over your nose, over the nose. Yeah, the muzzle. Like you're just driving around, but you got the client in the van. You got to keep that muzzle on. You can't breathe. Think about that.
Yeah.
I'm like, no, you can't breathe.
We have
breathe.
A caller.
Yeah,
I think
more.
It's Don or Suzette.
And I would like to talk more about private property. I got some interesting facts.
Well, just,
I mean,
yeah, go ahead and say
property.
It now. I'm going to pull Don in. Go ahead.
We are
okay.
The property.
Yeah, and more about private property, right? When I said people are making big money kicking Detroit residents out of their properties, and I would like to show a short piece of that documentary. It's only 1 minute long, and that would be it. It's not that long. It's very interesting. So let me just show you real quick. Let me know if you can hear it pretty well.
Homeowners pay property taxes based on a city's assessment of the value of their home. Home value goes up, your taxes go up. Home value goes down, your taxes are supposed to go down. When the Great Recession hit in the late 2000s, property values tanked. But Detroit didn't lower taxes far enough. One study found that between 2009 and 2015, the majority of homes in the city were overassessed. In 2010, 85% were. Even with recent improvements, reports show Detroit's assessments were inaccurate as late as this year. According to experts who spoke to Vice News, many of them were so high they violated the state constitution. What the law does allow for is a confusing city-county relationship. Wayne County fronts Detroit any missing tax money and then becomes the debt collector, charging struggling homeowners as much as 18% on unpaid taxes. If you're delinquent 3 years in a row, State law lets the county take your home and sell it in the auction. So to be clear, if you're like Judy, you got overcharged by the city on taxes, then got asked by the county to pay interest on them. Oh, and then when you couldn't, the county sold your home out from under you.
And that's how a lot of people in Detroit and, you know, and in places like those lost their houses. Hello? Hello? I'm just saying that's how a lot of people there lost their houses. Well, a lot of black people.
John's on the line, you guys.
Hey, hello, everybody. I'm sorry I'm late.
Did you sleep?
No. Well, I'm in right now La Habra, California, so I'm down the street from John, more or less. And we're here for a couple days. We just decided to go to Palm Springs and just take a trip. So we're down in Southern California and just kind of...
You were traveling less than 2 weeks ago.
I told you, you know it all the time I do it. We do a lot of traveling. We travel all the time. There have been times that we have traveled every week. When we lived in California, we would get out of here every week pretty much.
Are you at her oldest son's house?
No, we're at a hotel. It's his birthday, and he wasn't home. So but we were coming down to a hotel anyway, and just kicking back and relaxing in the beautiful sun.
It's warm up here today. It's in the 60s.
Oh, well, wow. That's what we got away from. This is pretty much, Palm Springs yesterday was 93. And then today we're probably around 80-ish. So, but I'm down in La Habra. So it's kind of it's a change from the winter. And we just wanted to get a couple weeks in while the sun is out. So we're here, and we've been doing a lot of legislative work. None of about property taxes, which is when I came in, it sounded like you guys were talking about.
We were talking about the concept of private property and how in 2018 the Supreme Court ruled that police cannot seize your phone without a warrant because your phone has so much data on it. And
right.
We were also talking about how in times the government seizes property when they're not supposed to.
Right.
Like forfeiture and stuff like that.
No, I forgot. In fact, that we are working on a bill that is going to limit the allowance of police to take property under certain circumstances where they've had the full reign of whatever they wanted to do. So we are in a property tax, a couple of property tax bills. But I was kind of interested about the Hunter Biden $4 million estate because right now we were kind of getting...
I think John was talking about his son living in Venice.
Well, yeah, and I have an interesting thing to bring up when you're done.
But everything is $4 million. I have a house that... we had a house here in Pasadena that we sold for $115,000. 30 years ago, and now it's worth, we saw it on the market for $649,000. And so that increase is, I don't know the percentage, but it's huge. We're talking
like a $500,000 difference.
For
30 years.
For a 1,000 square foot house, that's unheard of to me, but my house is increasing in value at the same pace. So, in a way, it's a two-edged sword. But, there's nothing. There are always silver linings
I was able to get my principal cut in half in the recession. So I had a good recession back in 2009. Is there somebody coming on or someone?
I think we've been invaded by the border. I think the illegals have crossed the border and taken possession of the show. Yeah, but the thing about what Don was talking about is we're told these are lies. We're told, like, you're a property owner. No, you're property. You are the property. You are owned. And see, like, I have a Chase Freedom Card. They call it a Freedom Card, like, because they think I'm stupid. Like, oh, I'm going to use this card because it's freedom. I'm free to buy this and buy that. No, it's a slavery card so I can work my ass off so they can make their usury, the interest that they've been charged, which the Bible talks about. God didn't want that. God told the Jews, don't charge your brother usury or interest. And they used to have what's called the year of Jubilee. And the reason I mention this is because we're at Passover and we're at Easter. We're talking about the freedom of, you know, Moses setting these people free. We're talking about Jesus coming and saving humanity from their sins. And they used to have the year of Jubilee every 50 years where all debts were forgiven. And God created the system because he didn't want slavery. He wanted people to be free. He wanted, like, so at the end of 50 years, if you owed a debt, it would be forgiven, which would create the idea that I'm not going to exploit my brother because if I put this big debt load on, he's just going to walk away from the debt. So I'm not going to over-exploit them. And so the point is we're living in slavery all the time. Just our thoughts are monitored, like, hey, John, show up to work, you know, hi, you know, blah, 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 you know, welcome to wherever, right? And then, you know, did you find everything you need today? Would you like a plastic or paper bag, you know, and on and on. And this is the total. Thank you very much. Have a great day. Come back. And this is, you know, again, you can't think. Every moment is go, 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 hustle, hustle. Keep the line moving and look productive. Be productive. And this illusion that we're free is not. We've sold ourselves out for materialism, and until the day you die, you get sucked into this. And if you don't, your partner gets sucked into it. Like, oh, we need that house, honey. And so if you go to work, and the point is you're going to see that person at home for a couple hours at night. The rest of the time you're unconscious, you're sleeping. And once you get up, I got to go to work. And that's two-thirds of your day. So this idea that you're your own person or free, it's an illusion. It's a slavery trap. And there's more to this. I'll pass the subject, you know, back to you guys.
But, John,
well,
don't we?
Yeah, yeah,
we do have some,
add to that.
We do have
to
some privacy rights in our country. Like, we have plenty. Some people have
got
a lot of personal time.
Well, I want to add
Albert, just be patient, okay?
Oh, sorry.
Give it away because I want to.
I have to go to work in about an hour, and people are allowed to interject when they want.
Yeah.
But,
people have they have the right to live a private life and not be involved
with
that much.
Because they give it up involuntarily with the Internet. That's the conundrum in
Well,
the Internet is the worst thing that could have happened to mankind.
Well, they chose it,
though.
A lot of people don't
thing.
Want privacy.
John,
they want attention.
Well, that's the whole point. If they want to do that, then they need to just go ahead and do what they're doing on the Internet and letting all of these things come to pass that are negative, that follow a joyous night or whatever may happen. But John was right about the I just want to mention, you know, that's the problem with the Bible. And it was, of course, written by white men. And for the most
part. Not really.
They
were Middle Eastern olive skin men.
Right.
Well, I think they were from Egypt. Oh, no, wait.
They were from the Sinai Peninsula and
right.
from where not the, where the new Israel is, and Damascus and areas like that.
In Acts 2,
the Ananias and Sapphias got in trouble. The Christians pooled all their property together and put it in one pile for everybody to use, and two people got greedy, and I think they were either kicked out or they died. No concept of private property, really, until the 17th century in England.
Yeah,
well,
and
John John was right when he said that the...
Yes, I'm yielding my power of the show.
Yeah.
So whoever wants to talk, but just wait till the next guy finishes.
Right,
yeah.
I just wanted to mention that John was right when he says that the Bible says that there is supposed to be no usury, and that is the basis of all finance today. So this is something that is hypocritical about the Bible and what is what people...
Well, I want to reverse the conversation. Okay, how about the conversation about cops trying to they used to get away with almost everything, and now there's cameras on them constantly, not just their own body cams, but outsiders, and Derek Chauvin wouldn't be sitting on trial had not that 17-year-old videotaped the whole thing of his kneeling on the neck. So cops could argue that their privacy is being breached.
Well, here, let me add something very interesting, that cops have something that's called qualified immunity. And that is a very interesting thing that a lot of people know about, because during the George Floyd case, it actually has been happening a couple of days ago, and, of course, Breonna Taylor, and, of course, other people that have been wrongfully murdered or brutally attacked by the police. And not a lot of people know about this qualified immunity that the police and government officials have, and that goes for all types of forms, Secret Service, federal agents, FBI, CIA, et cetera, right? And so now qualified immunity has been in America for centuries. It used to be called different during the slavery, during those times, but it changed names throughout the centuries. So right now it's properly known as qualified immunity. And what it is when a police officer, let's just say, shoots a completely naked man with his hands up, and the police officer thought he had a gun, even though he was naked and his hands was up, and he shot him like 20 times. You know what I mean? He can still qualify for qualified immunity if they believe that the police officer made an honest mistake and he wasn't trying to kill him. He was just trying to neutralize the threat. And he thought there was he made an honest mistake. They thought that he made an honest mistake. So even though if he breaks the Constitution and breaks a law, the police can get away with it if he thought that he was under threat, or he just made an honest mistake. He can literally admit that he made a mistake and still, even though the cop admits that he made a mistake, he can still qualify because that's what it is, right, to cover for those factors. And so that's why we can cover for the qualified immunity, which lets the police officers, completely unliable for those damages or killing those people. And so therefore, when a cop gets the qualified immunity, then the cases are maybe dropping. You can't continue to take that cop to court anymore. It's over. It's cut. That's how it works. And another thing about qualified immunity too, within that law, is that if the police officer has committed the same crime as another related case, he might not qualify. But even if he killed, like I said, a naked man with his hands up, and he was sitting there with his hands up for like 10 minutes, and he still shot him. If the case is different from a unique and different case, then he can qualify and get qualified immunity. And that is the problem. In fact, in New York, they just got rid of qualified immunity, and there's been a big fight and a big push to try to get rid of qualified immunity because it's just an unfair practice that's been going on for too long. And so that's part of the fight of police brutality. And I just wanted to bring up the qualified immunity.
Well, I actually favor qualified immunity, and I'll tell you why. I don't want a cop every 5 seconds wondering, am I going to get busted for trying to defend himself in a dangerous situation? And I also don't want them to sit there and go, you know what, I'm just not going to do anything because if I do, I can get sued. Now, I understand the case of someone's naked guy, hands in the air, but seriously, of the hundreds of thousands and millions of people pulled over, how many times does a naked man with his hands up in the air get shot? The cases that bother me are the George Floyd and the Breonna Taylors and all these other cases where you have people, either they're criminals or they're hanging criminals or they're doing criminal acts. George Floyd had enough fentanyl to kill himself 2 or 3 times. Breonna Taylor was running with a gangbanger for 3 or 4 years as part of a raid, and the guy that she was just, was running around with a gun because he's thinking that her boyfriend's going to come back and kill them both. So, again, yeah, I don't want the cops, when they're knocking on the door, going, I better, the other person has a gun on the other side, which is what he did, and he fired off, and then they're like, well, I better not do anything because I'm law enforcement, but I'm just their bitch. I don't like that. Now, I understand there's abuses to that, and, what do? But when it happens, fine, nail them on it. But the thing is, the cases that are touted nowadays, they're people doing criminal acts. The cops have been called to respond to a problem. That tells you right there someone was breaking the law. And that's where, I give a little leeway to the cops on that. I do.
Yeah, and of course on that, you're about that information that you have, the Beyond Trailer and George Floyd. By the way, a lot of cases that even when they get brought to the Supreme Court, they ask the questions to the family about, your suspect and your son or whatever suspect has been doing drugs or anything like that. They always ask incriminating questions. As hard they come down really hard. On the the victims of the family, on asking if they ever did drugs, if they ever did this, and they dig deep in to try to criminalize the victim. And when it comes to the police officer, his record hardly ever get digging up. Police officers are protected for another law. I forgot what it's called, but it's basically police privacy. So police have a privacy law where they're protected, where the records cannot be digged up. So they have a privacy law that allows them. So when they go to court, their records don't have to be pulled up unless you hired a private investor and he dug up and somehow you found them out. But through the criminal process, through the FBI agents to their records of search, some of those records they're not allowed to search for the police officer. So. And when you're a civilian, so all your records can be pulled up. So that's the difference. They're a very big difference in court. That's why you got to have all the information about George Floyd and Breonna Taylor, but not that much about the police officers.
Well, I had this last week, I'm driving at, 1 in the morning, and here comes Officer Grind My Butt. A sheriff in Marina Del Rey, they got nothing to do at 1 in the morning because there's nothing out here. Crime is at a pretty low pace. They don't have as many homeless as like Venice because it's high end. There's more money here. So it's just they sweep away if you want to call it the trash. But the point being is the cop sees me driving down the street, I've got a light bulb on the license plate and it's in a holder, but it gets out of the holder occasionally. It kind of pops out. It's old. It's loose. And so the light is there. You can see the license plate, but it's sticking out. So she pulls me over and does the whole drill. Do you have any warrants? Do you driver's license, blah, blah, blah. And we're just going through the whole routine. It's just like, okay, you can see the light. Here, let me go back here. You can see the light bulb. Here is where it fits. like, do you have some crime out there to find, some criminals, people breaking the law? I have a clean record, never been arrested, you know, no clean driving record. I'm just going to work to pay taxes to pay your salary. Now, that annoys me, but again, I'll give her a pass because she's doing her job. She's looking, trying to sniff out a criminal at 1 in the morning. But the point is, I'll give her a pass on that. But the, see, if I fought with the cop and pulled my hands in my pocket and made a big scene, and then she pulled, drawed her weapon and you know, maybe feared for her life, and, you know, I'm reaching in my pocket and she shoots me, I'm like, that's, yeah, I'm a dumbass. I kind of got what's coming my way. You know, is it harassment by the police? Sure. But their life is on the line. So I'm going to make them feel comfortable because I want them to stop the bad guy. I don't want them to be hesitant. That's the problem you have, is if you get too tight on the cops, they're just going to let the criminals walk and do whatever. And you say, well, that won't happen. That happens every time at the store. The homeless walk into the store, load up whatever they want, and they walk out the door, and no one can touch them because it's a lawsuit. If you call the police, guess what? It's going to be 2 freaking hours before they show up, and what are they going to do? It's homeless guy. They're not going to arrest them. They own our ass. And so, yeah, I don't want – I'm tired of that. I want the cops to show up, slap some cuffs on them, and kick their ass. So they stop – you know how come? Because I clean the freaking parking lot. And they just dump trash and shit all over. Yeah, I pick up stuff with shit on it in the parking lot. No one can do anything about it because they don't have a job. I have a job. They can arrest me, and I have to pay my bills. They know I will, so that's come they harass me. They leave the bones. That, why don't you, Marina Del Rey, Sheriff, why don't you go to the parking lot and pick up the bum that's shitting in the parking lot and has his tent there? I'm not going to do that. That's the stuff that really ticks me off, because that's the reality. Is that, you know, they're not going to go and shoot me. They're going to leave the bum alone.
Well, by the way, you know, if you ever get arrested, just so you know when that, you know, you're required to make a statement or, you know, or tell your story, the police, they have at least 3 months. In some counties, even 9 months until they can finally, you know, have to make their statement or, you know, story, basically. So you have to do it first, and then after they read your what you said, then they can say whatever they want. But they have a larger time to give their statements. To say,
that's true.
You know.
They're going to show up, and, you know, I have a job, so I'm not going to go to contest it because, you know, the judge is going to favor them if it's like a he said, she said type of thing. You know, like it was a female African American.
Yeah, they're giving more time for that. But
if I went to court and they say, oh, he was speeding, they would.
I got you.
Gotcha.
Before you make it another 10 minutes long, I just wanted to say something that I wanted to say half an hour ago about the private property. And there's something I wanted to say, and I thought it was very interesting about private property, what I was talking, you know, what we were talking about basically about half an hour ago. And I wanted to say this for a while now, but one time when I was in the hospital with my mother just recently, and I saw a black guy, he dropped off his, you know, his black father, you know, he dropped him off in the hospital and then he left, these Americans were like, wow, he's not going to, you know, they were kind of talking to some of these Americans, like, well, he's not going to keep him company, he's going to leave. And I thought about when I left home, I was like, well, I bet that guy has to go to work in the morning tomorrow. And, you know, and if I left, you know, my mother there and, you know, and I just barely had enough money to pay the rent, you know, and if I'm at a point where I can't miss one single day from work, because for some people, if you miss one single day of work, you might not have enough money to pay the rent or the mortgage, and you'll be short. You'll come up short. So for some people, they can't even miss one day of work throughout the month. So they have to show up every day. They can't miss one day of work. So when they drop their family off to the hospital, they cannot visit them until they get off of work. So they're kind of forced to, you know, you know, go to sleep and go to work and, you know, and then pick them up after they're done. But they don't have that option to visit the family at the hospital whenever they want. Like other people, they can, that, you know, if they wanted to, they can, for other people, if they wanted to, they don't have, they don't have to show up for work for like a week or two. If they wanted to, like, you know, for like, you know, upper middle class or rich people, if they want to, they don't have to go show up for work for months, and they can visit their, and they can be with their family all day long. They're, for most poor people, they have to go to work and they have to make a living. And even if their mom's in the hospital, they could be their mom could be dying, and, you know, you might not even be able to, you know, you might be at work while your mother's dying. And, you know, and you worry about making sure you can pay the rent. So when your mom gets out of the hospital, she can come back to a home and not have to sleep in a car, because you don't want your mother or your father, when you're coming out the hospital, and telling them, you know what, I didn't make the rent because I didn't work, so we're going to have to sleep in a car. You don't want to tell your mom or dad that. You don't want to tell they're going to be sleeping in the car. You want to make sure they have a house to come back to, you know, a house. So you got to be able, so you got to go to work, so you can't visit them. So if they die in the hospital, guess what? You're going to miss it. You're not going to be there. You're going to be at work. And I thought that kind of sucked.
Well, with COVID, you can't even visit people at the time anyway. I mean, I've had several friends who've been in the hospital.
I just said I was at the hospital recently. I was at the hospital with my mom recently, basically 2 days ago. And, in fact, I was able to visit my mom at the hospital.
Well, you're lucky, because, you know, a lot of people, most people can't. I mean, I had two friends here in the hospital. They couldn't see it. And, I mean, even they were, like, well, with the COVID, like, if they're dying on the ventilator, they can't be visited. They die alone. And then even, or take simple things like you take your dog into the vet. People are not allowed to be with their dog in most cases. So, you know, the doctor's trying to find out what's wrong with the dog. You know, the dog can't talk. Does this hurt? Woof, you know.
Yeah. Well, I think there should be a law in place. Well, you know how there is a law for fraternity, the fraternity law, that protects pregnant women after, you know, after they have the baby, they have a small amount of time to take a vacation before they have to go back to work, you know. And so that's the fertility, right? But there should be a law, if your family member's in the hospital, you should be able to take some time, take some paid leave time off of work, you know, like paid leave time. Like, you know how police officers all the time, they get paid leave, even when they kill somebody, like they kill somebody and they get paid leave all the time when they kill somebody.
Right.
I mean, you know, if they can get paid leave for killing somebody, police officers, then why can't you get paid leave to visit your family at the hospital? Why can't you get paid leave so you don't have to go to work?
I'm going off the air now.
You
guys can finish the show.
All righty. Thank you, Jane. Sorry about that.
I don't have time to talk to anyone. Everybody else is talking, so go ahead and talk. Good night.
Sorry about that.
No, that's all right. Go ahead, Albert, you were saying something about...
Well, yeah, I was saying that there should be a law to, just like the cops when they kill people and they still get paid leave, even though after they just kill somebody with their hands up and everything. There should be a law for civilians to have paid leave so they can visit their families at the hospital, you know.
There is a law, basically, for governmental employees to be able to do that. And then most corporations in general allow some kind of emergency PDOs, pay days off. And then,
well, that's their own policy. That's their own company policy. I know that the police
federal
employees, they have the you know, pay leave for hospital. But I mean regular civilians. Like if you worked at McDonald's or you worked at Walmart, right? You're not a federal employee. You know, you might not have paid leave to visit your family at the hospital, if your company does not support that, because that depends on the company's private policies.
That's true, but then in the officer's case, they are paid to defend. So, in other words, you don't go to work saying, oh, well, how was work today? I shot and killed a man, or a man assaulted me, he had a knife, I had to take him down.
Yeah, but I'm talking about visiting your family at the hospital. Visiting your family at the hospital. I'm talking about visiting your family at the hospital. You need to see your father and your mother is very sick
Albert,
at the hospital.
Albert,
my point
Albert,
is every day they face that, and I've had to kill an animal before, and you know you live with that. It's like, oh great, I killed this animal and I had to because there's a situation. I'm just saying you don't go to work every day going, oh, I might have to put someone down as a normal every day. Every time you stop someone, this guy might have the knife or the bullet going to take me out. I'm just saying that's a different stress level. You go home, you're trying to go home alive to your family. And then when you do shoot and kill someone, we're not psychologically, as humans, we're not wired to do that unless you're an animal or you have some psychological issues. So I'm just saying I'll give them a break on that because, you know, until you shoot and kill someone or face death every day as part of your regular job description, I just don't know if I can judge them like that.
So
you know.
So what you're trying to say is that the people, the regular civilians, should not be liable for paid leave to visit their families at the hospital.
They should be. You have your own personal sick time. You should be able to take that, or your personal leave, or your bereavement leave. But the point of what I'm saying is that
sometimes you don't have those.
It's a fact of life that soldiers and cops and people who kill. Part of their job description are getting messed up. They can't deal with it. Many people, mostly. Some can't, but, you know, it's just a fact of, like tonight, someone's going to go out and kill someone. And someone is not going to be able to live with that consequence, you know, because we think we can, but we're not wired to do that. You know, it's abnormal. You don't teach your kids, hey, you know, you got a problem with Billy, go kill him. You know, it just the scarring that happens with that is unmeasurable. So,
well, I think that sucks because, well, check this out. If a police officer shot your mother and your mother's at the hospital and he gets paid leave and you don't get paid leave and you're forced to go to work or else you're not going to make enough money to pay the rent and you're going to end up being homeless because it's either one thing. You stay with your mother at the hospital or you don't go to work and you lose your house. So you have that choice to make, but the police officer who shot your mother doesn't have that choice to make. He gets paid leave. So how would you like it if you did not have paid leave to visit your mother at the hospital who got shot by a police officer? You were forced to go to work.
You guys need
to
take turns.
Okay.
The show is ending in 20 minutes. Everybody take turns.
Well, Jane's a mother. How many times have you been shot by the police? Do you live in fear of that? And what would you do to get
Jane Huffman hasn't had time to talk.
I'm asking you a question. You can respond to it. Has the police tried to shoot your mom? Jane, has the police tried to shoot you? And for what reason, if they did, why would they show up with a gun and start shooting a mom? Unless you're like running drugs or you're hanging out with a gangster? Or you're drunk? Making a scene?
You know, there's a lot of innocent people that get shot. I mean, have you heard of the case where the police officer shot a 9-year-old girl? He was in her house without permission, without warrant. He got scared of the dog and he shot
right.
and missed the dog and shot a 9-year-old. Or another story, how the police officer was coming up to this house.
I can answer the question, John. I've been pulled over 9 times and I've only gotten a ticket once. And no, the cops have never held a gun to me. But one time I left my car insurance in the trunk and they acted nervous like I had something in the trunk when I went back to get it.
Yeah. Right.
They said, "Do you have a gun back there?" I said, "No, I don't. Just my car insurance."
The point of what I'm trying to make is just percentages. You can take an example of anything. You can take an example that a dog attacked a baby and ate it. It's like, okay, so don't get a dog. Dogs are dangerous.
That's based on a true story.
But the percentages of criminals that assault cops is higher. It just is. And that's statistics.
Actually, studies show on the amount of rate of criminals killing cops versus cops killing, you know, people are a lot higher on the other way around. It's actually by 1,000 a year. cops kill like 1,000 civilians a year in the United States. In England, uh-huh. in England, cops kill about like 12 or about 6 people a year in England. And of course, you could say England's a smaller country, but of course, there's other countries they go down to 0 or 1 a year, and other titular countries. The United States has the highest ratio of cop killing civilians, 1,000 a year.
Countries have
when you look at civilians killing cops.
Atlanta shootings of the Asian people.
When you look at civilians killing cops, that's only about 6
killed in the recent Colorado shooting.
Look at the number of five cops dying a year versus 1,000 civilians dying a year by cops. The ratio is a lot larger the other way around, don't you think?
Albert, we're one of the only countries in the world that allows people to have guns. And we are the only country in the world to let black people have guns. So for the most part, what they're comparing is apples to oranges. We can't compare the United States gun police, gun violence, death to the UK or Norway or anybody.
Australia used to have guns, but they kind of banned all the guns in Australia. Well, and the United States government is looking to do the same thing they did in Australia.
Yeah.
Right,
the
Australian Sweden.
The number you quote, though, is you're slanting your statistics. How many times do you encounter a cop, I mean, personally, what, once or twice a year if he pulls you over? How many times do cops encounter people every day, 10, 15, 20 times? They get a call every hour to respond. So at the end of the year, he's going to have, like, let's take 8 times 200, that's, you know, 16,000, 20,000, whatever, encounters. I'm going to have 4 or 5 encounters with, you know, a sheriff that pulls me over or a policeman. So, yeah, the ratio of shooting compared to exposure is not, you know, the cops are not in a bad percentage compared to me. Now, if I encounter, like, 20,000 cops, it's going to be a different issue with guns. So anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, but this is not about the one bad apple, about the one cop, or, you know, the one cop that, you know, just, you know, lost his cool because after so many years of working, then he just, you know, he just lost his cool and decided. Imagine airplane pilot. Like, what would you think of an airplane pilot that flies airplanes every day, right? This airplane pilot flies airplanes every day, mm-hmm. and, you know, the one time he just lost his cool. And he crashed a plane, you know, and so then airlines will tell you, oh, well, you know, we only crash planes once a year. So, you know, your family died. Too bad. You know, they're not liable, you know, because they were under pressure, just like cops under pressure. Right. So what would you think of airline pilots? Oh, yeah. No, that wouldn't be fair. If airplanes were crashing once a month, if you saw airplanes crashing once a month, like United Airlines were crashing their planes once a month. Or the famous Boeing 737, they crashed twice simultaneously, and then they had to ground down the airplane for a federal investigation. FCC had to investigate that airplane because Donald Trump had to ground those airplanes because they were, you know, there was some crooked policy. There was money cheap, you know, cheap parts and blah blah blah. Long story about airplanes, but anyways, if pilots were crashing their airplanes, you know, every now and then, that would not be acceptable. That would not be acceptable. And the same thing rules apply for a cop. That would not be acceptable for a cop. Because here's the thing: when you're talking about bad apples and good apples, right? Oh well, these cops are bad. You know, that one cop was a bad person. They shouldn't represent the whole department. Well, guess what? If he worked 20 years at that department. You know, and he worked with that same partner. Now, here, wait, let me finish. And let's just say he worked 20 years at the Palm Desert Police Department, right? And he worked, and his partner was the same guy for 20 years, his partner, okay? Now, of course, you say this one guy, Joe, right? Joe, this cop, right? He did something bad. He's a bad apple. Now, his partner was working for him for 20 years, and he knew about all the crimes this cop was committing. And, you know what I mean? And eventually the word gets around. So if the whole station knew about this one cop you know, they was committing all these crimes, then are all those other cops the good apples, or they're not bad, or are they bad apples because they allow their partner to commit crimes and did nothing about it? Didn't tell Sapir, didn't tell the FBI, just did allow this one cop to make all these bad criminal things. So are there also good apples?
No, they're bad apples because they're accomplices. So for the most part, they're criminals. And that's an obvious choice. And you've got to understand, Albert, that you know, these cops are gang members. They're a member of the police gang. If you want to call them that, that's fine. They know it. They go out and make sure that they can infiltrate different places. They have their secret talks. They have languages between them. You know, the cops are in a gang. So we're dealing with criminals in a gang. And that's what a lot of cops are. That, you know, and that's what I go out and stop, or I try to change with the legislature. That, you know, make sure that the police don't have qualified immunity or don't have... You know, what I'm getting at is that I go out, and I'd like you to go out, because that was, you know, one of the things you just said, and I forgot what it was exactly, but it was a good idea. But you need to have a platform to speak it. So, you know, these are things that, that I want, you know, I want everybody to be able to understand that they can address their legislature to change all of the things that, that everybody does, including the cops. Main thing, though, is that every time you breathe, it's against the law. The law, the legal system is so discombobulated, if you will. It's got too much stuff, and we need to pare down some of these laws, enforce what we have, and then make sure that we're not putting too much on the populace to try to keep up, because the law is changing every 6 months. So people don't have time to keep up, and that's their that's the institutional that's their plus. That's what they want to do, and they're doing it. So we need people to rise up and just state their piece.
Yes, and of course, for every bad cop that gets caught, there's about a dozen more cops are committing crimes that haven't got caught yet. I mean, you
because
look at one police that worked for 20 years at one committing crimes for 20 years at one station, for 20 years committing crimes, and you don't think the other police departments also were not committing crimes? That's a ridiculous thing.
It's a gang. Yeah. It's a gang, Albert. You got to get that through your head. It's a gang. It's a criminal gang.
You guys
the
don't
police.
Like cops, I take it.
No,
you know,
no,
I never told a cop like
no,
hi, I'm glad
no,
you're here,
John,
and thank you
it's not,
for
we
the
don't
job.
Like cops.
You guys are just big fans of the police. I mean,
I'm a
you know,
son
I'm
of a cop. I'm a son of a cop. I'm not.
Every time I see a police officer,
no, we just want
a
fair system, just a fair. Just want to be able to hold the police accountable in a fair justice system.
Right. So, well, you know, next time, like I say, go find some gang members, call them up, and flash them some signs. Like, hey, I really appreciate the list you do.
They already
so call
know
them
they're
up.
A gang. They already know
I watched
a, gang.
A documentary last night on Detroit, and the police were involved with all the high, steep corruption of the 1990s.
Yeah.
They did
sure.
cover-ups. They turned their backs on informants. They covered up a shooting of a drive-by of a kid by a major gang member who lived there. Mm-hmm. Not a gang member, but a drug dealer. They were in one of the cops was named Gil Hill. He was in Beverly Hills Cops too, and he was just involved with all the corruption, just like the criminals.
Right,
and the city went to hell because of it.
Because
oh, you know what, Suzette was on. I just refreshed the page, Suzette. How long were you on hold?
Hello?
Yeah.
Well, anyway, Suzette has been on hold a while, but I apologize. I didn't refresh the page in the last half hour. How long were you on hold, Suzette?
Just a little while. It wasn't long at all. Don't worry. I was listening to the conversation, just, you know, catching up and enjoying. Apologize for jumping in so late. I have a little one that's not feeling so well tonight, so I need to make sure they got their medicine.
It's okay.
Sorry to hear that.
You guys, I have to go to work in an hour and a half, so I'm just going to let you guys talk. But John or Albert or somebody, tell her what's going on. I think she has been listening, though. Okay?
Thank you, Jane.
Right.
Have a good night.
Thank you, Jane.
Thank you, Jane. Thanks,
yep.
Thanks, Jen.
Good night. You guys can keep going.
Have a happy evening.
Yeah, it was about private property and, you know, police justice system.
Yeah, so but to recap, basically, Jane started off on a kind of the history of land rights, property rights, you know, through the English system, through the kings and nobles and the feudal systems. And we've kind of talked about what I kind of threw out was that we are property. We are owned. No one is free. You go to work, you're owned. You pay your property taxes. You know, all day you work. You think you own things, but you don't, because they tell you what to say, think, do, dress, and you go home, and then you're owned by the person you lived with, or your children, or whatever. There's a system. So really, no one is free per se, unless you live on an island somewhere. But then we kind of gravitated to police, and I'm kind of pro-cop, and the rest of the crowd is not. And so it's kind of a basically my feeling on it is just that the police are evil, just like we are evil. Like we all have our own little things that we do that break the law.
Don just said he's pro cop. We're both pro cops, but for the right cops, not the wrong ones.
Well, from the way the conversation was, it's like
very
every cop
well
says something dumb, and they're all evil, and they got to be stopped. So I don't know. I don't see a lot of cop loving on this show.
No, that's all right.
I did hear Dean say that his son-in-law is a police officer. I don't like the term cop. It just sounds weird. But some of them do earn, you know, have earned respect and so forth. But anyway, there are those that, you know, whatever, they're no good. But there's people like that everywhere. I think, you know, my husband and I lately have been watching on YouTube these old clips from the 1920s, 1930s of like New York City or California or some town, you know, that they had recorded a movie, old movies from. And it's remarkable the way these people drive. You have horse and buggies, you know, crossing the road whenever they feel like it. The cars go around them. You know, there's no stop lights. There's no stop signs. They just drive. Oh, I'm going to make a turn here. Whoop, there we go. You know, and their Model Ts and whatever. And it's just nuts. It's absolutely nuts. People just standing in the middle of the street right next to the trolley tracks, just having a conversation. You know, there was no laws. There was no rules. But people knew how to respect each other, go around, you know, or honk your horn for them to move. And I know that I believe it's in South Korea. That's how they do their turn signals. They don't have turn signals. They honk their horn when they're going to make some type of move, you know, so that people know, okay, I'm keeping an ear out. You got to be constantly aware and on the on the offensive to know what you're doing. Otherwise, you're going to get in an accident. So a foreigner going there to drive would be totally lost. They would think, oh, this is chaos, madness. I can't get me off the road. Find me a taxi. You know, we've just surrendered so many rights to laws when we're supposed to be our self-governed, you know. And you're right there, John, with the we don't own ourselves or our property. You know, we're slaves to give our money to the IRS so that we can, you know, live and hopefully be able to make that tax payment, because if not, they'll put a lien on the house that I pay for with my hard-earned money or whatever, you know. But the land down below, if you didn't get the deed on that prior to you know, moving into your home that may have been there already, then basically the land below your house, you don't own. People think that they do because they bought the house, but they don't. And that's how these companies, these corporations can come in and drill fracking and all this other, and they're getting fire sparks out of their water, you know, the faucets and stuff like that. And they're like, how can you do that? This is my land. This is my house. And they're like, no, you bought the house, but you didn't buy the land that the house is sitting on. And they automatically assume that it came with it. So back to you.
Wow. Well, by the way,
I just want to say the chief of police is the highest ranking officer in a department. And by the way, to be a chief of police, you have to, and many of these police unions, your dad and your uncle have to already be a police. So they have to be within your family, or you have to, work at a police station for about like 20, 30 years. It depends on which police, but to get such a position. But you have to be well connected, and also be in the union or the police union, and you're not just. By the way, the chief of police. It's not just voted in just by the mayor or by the, or by the votes or anything. The chief of police are voted in and put in place by the police unions that pick them. So, there's no independent person that can become the chief of police, just by, many years of experience and studying and, college and all these degrees. And even if you have family members, that stuff still might not cut it, because even so, you have to meet the requirement and be in the union and stuff within the, union and stuff, and get voted in by, and you have to get voted in by the union itself to become the chief. So it's a very rigorous, a very crooked way on how police officers get hired. And, I think there should be a real reform on how the hiring police process.
Now, respectfully, I don't want to go right off the bat and start in on anything, but honestly, there have been, like, here in California, Los Angeles Police Department is one. Another one is, they had hired a police chief from the outside. There are many police stations or police departments that hire from the outside because of the corruption that was found, and then they took it down and they got rid of the bad eggs, or they think they have, because there's always some still dwindling, but nevertheless. So they'll hire from outside. We hired New York's chief of police for a while here in Los Angeles. And, what city is that? I'm trying to – Baltimore, I believe it is. They hired their police chief, a black man, qualified, and he took the position there. And that's, kind of what the problem was with the whole George Floyd thing, as far – how did he – this cop, Chauvin, get hired, because he had a previous – complaint and records that he got transferred to that police department? And why didn't that police chief and the city council, reject him or send him to someplace else? But they didn't. And so, I don't want to get into that, but I'm just saying, as far as they hire from without, because the city council has to answer to the people. So yes, they do promote from within the ranks, but when it comes to the police chief, if he's not doing his job or found to be corrupt, they will hire from the outside.
So I could see value in both. You kind of want someone who knows the system, and usually by reputation, if the system was efficient, like if I worked at a place 40 years and I'm breaking the law all the time, sexually harassing employees, I'm stealing from the company, I'm breaking policy, I mean, in a bad way, I can understand that. Like, you want a reputation. Well, over 40 years, he's complied within this system, it's effective. You don't want someone coming in and going, well, I didn't know anything about the history of, mistreatment of minorities here, so I'm just going to wave my magic wand all over the place. But the problem is, of course, you do get corruption when there's favoritism, when people align to conspire. On to that point, I hate to slide in a different point, but I think it's appropriate. Do you know? Because I had this conversation with a neighbor, and he put the whole classical points about COVID and about Donald Trump. It took 3 years for this outsider Trump to come in and to have the federal judges tell Hillary Clinton, you have to testify about your server. For all this time, finally, they Judicial Watch pinned it down, and federal judge ordered her last summer, you got to testify. And what does Hillary Clinton do? Because she's part of this system of privilege. She goes, I'm not going to do it. Went back to court again. Over and over. Finally, December, judge said, you have to. No matter what, you must come in. And they contested it and say, okay, by February or whenever, you know, January this year, you're going to have to under oath, just like all the Trump people did in the Mueller report. And guess what happened? In the first 2 months of Joe Biden, the federal judges took a look at it again and said, you know what? That's okay. Not so important. I don't have to do. After all this time, you know, this system is so corrupt, can't even get her to raise her hand and just say, this is what I know. Oh, and I was talking, the reason I bring this point is because my neighbor was saying, well, hey, they've investigated all that, and they didn't find anything. She's innocent. I said, oh, really? 30,000 emails deleted, phone smashed, hard drive bleach bit. Sure. Are you kidding me? The most corrupt criminal family in the history of the United States. And it goes, oh, here's one that's even more corrupt. Richard Nixon, he got us off. There's three problems we have today. The cost of money, right? What did he do? He took us off the gold standard. He obliterated the value of money. Number two, guess who opened up China, who is at the bottom of the economic gene pool? Ping pong diplomacy, Richard Nixon. And guess what other problem we have that is the center of the whole world that we deal with, right, that Joe Biden's reopening up? Oh, the Middle East, OPEC, the petrodollar. Let's go over to the Middle East and kill some more of those people so we can get good gas prices. Trump brought in fracking, right? But no, we don't want that. We want to kill Middle Easterners to get our gas money. That, and so those three biggies, Richard Nixon, and with, along with Henry Kissinger, super Jew, bringing all these problems to the world. That's my educational minute or 5 minutes of the week is Richard Nixon and the system of the Clintons. Any response to what I just said?
Bill Clinton is a rapist. That's all I got to say. Bill Clinton hanged out with Jeffrey Epstein in his private airplane for like 25 times in his airplane, and he's been at his island. So Bill Clinton is just a sexaholic rapist. He even got caught with Monica Lewinsky. But of course that was before then, you know, him hanging out with Jeffrey Epstein many times over on his airplane and his private island. So I don't have anything good to say about Bill Clinton.
How about Hillary too? Because you know they both went to the New Mexico ranch for their vacations of Epstein's.
Yeah. Oh no. Hillary Clinton, the Benghazi incident, and the Haiti's corrupted stuff she did in Haiti's, and you know many other stuff. So Hillary Clinton is bad too. Bad news. But they're all bad news. You know, Donald Trump and Biden, all of them, all those big, well-connected government officials, they're all bad news.
Now,
I'm talking
Trump
about the establishment.
Well, Trump's not the establishment, though. He hasn't been in – he had 3 years of Trump. We've had, 30 years of the
Trump? He hangs out with the establishment. He hangs out with Bill Clinton. He went golfing with George Bush. He takes pictures with him. He invited Hillary Clinton Bush to his wedding. He hangs out with them.
Yes, and how about this? What did Nixon do? He took us off the gold standard. What is Trump trying to do? Abolish the Fed and put us back on gold. What did he do about
again,
China?
Again, I tell you, Donald Trump doesn't give a shit about you.
Oh, he does. Oh, you mean with tariffs on China and shutting them down? Are you kidding me? Or calling out the Wuhan virus? Or what about, again, fracking versus everyone else who wants to instead go to the Middle East or get their oil from Russia on their pipeline? Donald Trump is the counter to everything, to Hollywood, to the human trafficking, to all the whole movement of our culture, of education, to teach us that America is the slave country and we're the most evil country. And he's the one who's actually promoting that, you know, America first, make America great again. So,
by
the way,
Donald Trump also hand out with Jeffrey Epstein, just so you know. So,
20 years
ago. Here's the thing, and wait, let me put some interesting facts. Jeffrey Epstein, he not only picked up girls in New York and whatever, brought them over to rape them and what, he also bought and purchased girls, modeling girls from modeling companies. One fact that we're trying to take, this one guy, I don't remember his name, but and see, Donald Trump owns a modeling company. And Jeffrey Epstein has gone to Donald Trump and checked out his models that Donald Trump has. And Jeffrey Epstein was known to purchase models and take them to his private island, you know, his airplane,
well,
you know what.
Over 12 years ago, and it wasn't Donald Trump
Let me finish. Yeah. And so, I mean, and look how Donald Trump treats his women and his models. He grabs his models by the pussy. He grabs him by the pussy. So this is a person who grabs his models by the pussy. So you don't think Donald Trump sold some of his models to Jeffrey Epstein?
He said that the women say that they would even let you grab their pussy. He didn't say, I go around grabbing pussy.
He said he's rich and famous, and he can literally get away with them grabbing by the pussy.
I doubt that he's grabbed Kayla by the pussy or any of the people that are that work in his administration who was the House Speaker before that she's running for governor now. I doubt that he grabbed her pussy.
What about this one girl who's taking Donald Trump to court for raping her?
Yeah, I know. Like 30 years
okay,
ago, right?
No,
30
but
years ago.
No, the last one has to be within that statute of limitations, and it was, apparently. But the thing is that they all do it. It doesn't matter who, what, when. When I say all, of course, I'm not being overly ebullient, but when you get that kind of power, you understand that you are above the law. And when you understand you're above the law, that's when anything happens. The corruption happens, everything else. And right now, we're in a situation where Americans, especially, are getting so arrogant and big-headed that we are overburdening the world with our power. And so this is something we're going to have to figure this out, because we've got the world beating us in a lot of things, and we're becoming too slow. That's what happens when you have a behemoth against nimble, you know, foes, nimble enemies. You become so large, attacks on our internet. You have such a large internet connectivity, and like we do here in America with our government and our corporations and everything else, it takes us a long time to get in here. So all these people in China, Indonesia, North Vietnam, Haiti, Dominican Republic, Nigeria, Kenya, Israel, these guys are pros at getting money from anyone. And that, you know, we're right now so slow that we're going to take ourselves down. And that's for real.
And here's an interesting thing right here. that what was I going to say? Oh, yeah. That, you know, prostitution is illegal, but porn is legal. The difference is one has a camera and the other one doesn't. And so rich people, like millionaires, they use porn to get all their hot women. Billionaires, you know, like Jeffrey Epstein, they use the modeling companies to get their women. And sometimes they get their women fresh off the street. The younger the better, of course, for Jeffrey Epstein. But not just him. You know, he opened up a lot of other people that are also within the other billionaires are also within the business of you know, buying models and, you know, getting, you know. So, like I said, millionaires, they have sex with porno girls, and billionaires, they have sex with models and the youngest. I mean, and look, and even famous people, what was his name from the they came out in the movie Titanic? Oh, I forgot his name. Anyway, the guy that came out in the movie Titanic. Leonardo DiCaprio, yeah, he dated like four models straight off the magazine.
Let's say we go ahead and stipulate that, yeah, that's true. That's like a no-do. Yeah. You could be the ugliest man on earth, but if you have money, you're going to find a cool chick, you know, she'll do you.
As long as they're
exactly. But I'm just saying how rich, the richer you are, the more money you'll have, you know, the more you can get and also get away with. You know, if you were poor and you're trying to, you know, pick up a girl off the corner to have sex with her, to pay her some money to have sex with her, guess what? You're going to get caught by the cops and you're going to go to jail. But if you're a millionaire and you go to the porno industry and you say, I want that girl, bring her over to my house, I'm going to have sex with her, and, you know, and we'll just put a camera just in case. And that's it.
Okay.
You're above the law.
Okay, we agree.
Yeah, but I don't care what people do in their own personal life. If they have $1 billion, they're going to attract a lot of that. Women run to that. So I don't have an issue with that. That's people's freedom of choice. And if you don't have enough game to attract a woman, there are people that are poor. There are people, guys who come out of prison, and they're banging girls in the first day. I'm serious. And how do I know? Because I have a family member that got out of jail. Do it like in the first 6 months. He had like three girlfriends. They're all like serious relationships. One of the guys who got out of prison.
Yeah, but Jeffrey Epstein didn't attract girls.
The first day he gets laid. And then the second day he goes to the library and he gets laid again because women are, because he has game. He's a bad boy. He's dangerous. And women are attracted to that power and that danger and that passion and excitement. So, you know, again, I don't have a problem with that. What I want is just someone who fights for me to have a job in America, not China, who will allow me to defend myself with a gun, who will put us back on a gold standard and not have us going to other countries for oil and killing them, but rather we make our own oil, whether it's fracking or we do solar, whatever we do. But the point is, who's fighting all that? Trump is. The rest of these other idiots, they could care less. Joe Biden is. Oh, we're concerned about 6 feet of distance. They have 50 kids in a room right now, 6 inches apart without masks, and they're going to let them loose into the country. That's 130,000 people last month at the border. That's your Joe. Trump had it shut down. He's the counter to all this establishment. So, yeah, he has his fault in the past. But, again, in the last – since he's been president, you think he's been banging chicks all over the place? You know, I think all the people, the gals that work for him are – Kellyanne Conway, you think she's giving, you know, you hear her husband is banging on, is screwing Trump more than Trump is screwing women, to tell you the truth.
By the way, if you defend yourself with a gun without a badge, you're going to jail. So if you want to be able to defend yourself with a gun, get a badge.
That's not true. Somebody enters my house and they come through my window. If they're in my house, I can shoot them, and it's a defense.
Well, you'd be surprised. Yeah, well, there's actually some cases where people broke in and they got shot, and the shooter went to jail, even though the people went broke in their house. There's cases that happened.
Regarding that matter, so California is one of those states where I can, and then some other states have the standard ground, which California does not have. So it's each state has their own laws regarding that. But here, even if I smash him over the head with the frying pan and give him a concussion and his head swells and he dies, self-defense.
Well, the thing is that Albert's right in that a Second Amendment doesn't really – there should be – you should have a badge if you have a gun. Because if you guarantee the militia part of the Second Amendment that they can only have a gun if you're in the militia, that really does limit – it should limit gun ownership to the militia. So, you know, that's the first part of it, of course, that this, and it can be convoluted explanation that the rest of the population, I don't know that last part. The trained militia is where you do need a badge.
No, you don't.
Sure you do.
I haven't heard
that's
that.
Yeah, no. If you look at the
American Revolution, was it the government of Britain? No,
it's
the people did.
It was a trained militia that limited when they came and they took over. You know, our patriots took over. It was they wanted to limit the amount of people who could actually do what they just did, and so that's why they added the Second Amendment. A trained militia, so who can have guns, and that was just so that the insurrection wouldn't happen again.
Well, I'm all for insurrection if the Constitution provides, if our government does not listen to us and keep us our freedoms or maintain it, that we are actually. We're forced to defend and to overthrow that government and to establish our freedom. So I have
correct.
A problem with it. You know, like who defines militia and how many militias can
who
you have?
The question is who defines what the type of democracy we are supposed to defend? That's the question. What kind of a democracy are we supposed to defend? The one that is in the Bill of Rights, that's in the Constitution, as a dead Constitution, or are we supposed to fulfill the living Constitution ideology of the Federalist Papers? You know, those are distinctions that need to be made in order to determine what allows a person to have insurrection.
Well, I think you have to look at the Second Amendment very carefully because I think we all have the right to bear arms and establish a militia. I don't think you have to be in the militia to carry arms, but I have to look at the wording very carefully.
It's a trained militia. And so what constitutes a trained militia has been defined as the state police. And they're the only ones who should be able to carry guns. The state police are considered a militia, a trained militia.
You really are deep state, Don. Trained militia. My goodness.
Absolutely. I mean, Big
brother, right? Big brother? Is that it? Big brother?
Well, the state police is more or less big brother, an extension of them. Yes.
How about Big Brother, man?
Big Brother, he has his tentacles and everything, especially now that the internet's here. So we know the First Amendment is gone. It's fucked. It's fucked. It's totally screwed. And as I said, I was trained as a journalist, and the First Amendment is what we protected with our lives. And instead, now everybody has a computer. Every 60-year-old thinks they have an IQ of 5,000. And it's really a sad state of affairs that it has no regulation where anyone can get an insight, whatever they want.
Oh, by the way, by the way, to quote it, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Not the right of the militia, the right of the people to keep and bear arms. Now, if you want to start a militia with it, fine. But the point is, I have the right. It doesn't say the right of the militia. No, no, the right of the people. I'm people. I have the right to bear arms. Now, if I want to join a militia, that's fine. If I want to resist government, fine. But the point is, no, I don't have to be in a militia to bear an arm. I have the right as the people to bear and carry my arm. So just so you clarify the language, because you try to get swing it into a direction, state police, John Yoder must join the state. It doesn't say that. It doesn't even state police.
John Yoder should have joined the state police anyway instead of working at 99 Cent Store and cleaning up people's shit.
Are you kidding? I love it. Okay, Suzette,
yes.
What do you think?
I think it is. It shouldn't be different than what you have just read. It is what it is. And that's a large part of what our problems are, is because the Supreme Court is not supposed to interpret what they think that the law says under the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. They're supposed to uphold what is said in the Bill of Rights and the Constitution. And right now, we have 4,000 pages of interpretations versus a 3,000-word constitution. I mean, so pretty much right now our structure is gone. And so we are not operating under constitutional law. We are operating under Supreme Court law.
Ooh. Sounds like we're screwed.
Not really.
Yeah, more like martial law.
There's a group of people, an organization, a grassroots, that are working on this and working to propose a convention of states. Not a convention of states to redo the Constitution, but a convention, Article, 5, that will allow amendments to be made to the Constitution, which restricts and limits the government powers because they're way far-reaching out of this earth. And then also to limit the budget. And, term limits. Those are the three items that they're proposing. And so right now they have to have 34 states in order for Congress to take up that Article 5 or reject it. 38 have to agree upon it for it to be ratified. So there are 16 states on board right now that just signed their resolution on board with Article 5 Convention of States. And if you're interested, go to conventionofstates.com to find out more about it.
The Constitution was written by slave owners originally, and then revision by the same family members and same people connected well into our slave owner generations. So these are generations and generations of families that back then were slave owners, and now are still slave owners even today. If you look at the prison population and how the prisons run and how the prisons
and you trace them back to the same
people. Work people for 10 cents an hour. You know what I mean?
That prison to the same families that you're talking about way back when?
No, I'm mainly talking about private prisons, private prisons per profit. Private prisons per profit are definitely. You can't keep those prisons open with no prisoners inside. They'll go broke. They'll run out of money. They need prisoners to be inside those private per profit prisons. So there's a very high incentive, to get prisoners in there.
I guess we know. But all prisons are bad. All prisons are bad because when you think about it, if somebody's committed a crime, then it needs to be addressed whatever crime that it is that they committed rather than to lock somebody up for years on end because they've got nothing to come out to. So they're just going to do it again. Why not do something to rehabilitate, not in prison, but to rehabilitate, motivate, so that person can lead, if they're into it, a productive life. So they don't have to go back. But
state mayors put money into the city to build stuff, rather than build another school or build a foundation, to help people get jobs, or build
another job
facility or school for more education, more
jobs.
More helping
you
people.
Want people to
they
get
put
jobs.
More money into prisons. They put more money into prisons. One of these senators hired. There was one case where a senator he hired an investigative team to see to look into the schools and stuff like that, and also to the poverty rate, how many poor people are around. They made an estimate, and with that estimate, they were able to build their private prison to get an estimate future on how many future prisoners they'll be able to withhold within their private prison they were building for the future.
That's what they call the education prison pipeline. But, that's one of the things that's normal. You've got to understand, prisoners, correction officers, the system itself, prison system itself does not want to rehabilitate, because it's so much easier to have a pool of recidivists who, if they're kept uninformed. So they don't want they don't want to rehabilitate any prisoners, because that means that they won't have that same prisoner coming back.
Right. They won't have that same money they can count on for their budgets.
Easy federal funds. Easy federal funds. Besides the military, and the Department of Education and the Department of Transportation, the Department of Corrections makes people, they skim more money, or it's more corrupt than almost any organization. You have to throw the VA in there too. But these places are nothing more than piggy banks that just everybody keeps putting money in, and no services are rendered.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you won't get any argument from me on that. That's exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
I this convention of states is, we need signatures on there, because the state has to get people on board before they can send it to D.C. And I just ask you to take a look at it. I mean, what they're doing, despite this comes from their page, they've been working on it for 7 years already. They've done their research, and they talk about the different things that are happening that we're seeing, like the 10th Amendment. We have that, but it doesn't matter, because today, no subject in today's America is exempt from federal power. We're all under the gun some way, some form, on the hook, and that's not right. But that's just one aspect. Then we have the federal takeover of Western lands, and, whenever they deem a piece of land that they want, they just make it federal land. I mean, they can't do that, but they do. And, a lot of that they can't, they do, and this is what it's going to, they're working on fixing through the right channels, with all the states on board, or at least, like I said, 38 states that people can get on board with, because it's not a left-right thing. It's not a liberal thing. It's not an anything thing, except for the fact that we need to rein in these powers. And,
but there's two things to that about this. One, there is no absolute guarantee. You mentioned that there was only going to be a subject of those three categories, but there's still no absolute guarantee, even in writing, that somebody is not going in a new constitutional convention is not going to go above and beyond and usurp the power of the reason for being there, that by bringing up all kinds of stuff. There's no guarantee that they won't.
When you make your application, you have to choose your issues, and you can't change those issues. So each state, like California, has to choose their issues. And that holds. That's our application. We're not taking over any powers, and we're not overtaking the Congress or anything like that. But because we are United States, and the Constitution has provided this article, or the Founding Fathers provided Article 5, in case we ran into problems with a runaway government like we do have right now, they put this in there to allow the states to propose these issues that we want Congress to take up and to amend in the Constitution. So, you know,
Good luck with that. Because the second thing is that it's going to go by way of the ERA, where we're going to miss a couple of deadlines over the years, and you get your 38, then it's going to be another uphill climb to get over the deadlines that were passed. And that's probably what is what, because nobody really wants to have a change to the Constitution because it's going to be too many problems.
Well, I don't know. Like I said, there are 16 states on board that pass resolutions through their state assemblies.
And
so
you need 20, and you're going to need 24 more. And that's going to be, or 22 more. And so that's going to be an uphill battle that is Herculean. It's worth it. No, it's that people have been thinking about it for a long time, because I believe that in the hearts of the constitutional, I don't even want to call them fathers. They're not my fathers. They're a bunch of white slave owners. But the intent, some of the intent is there for the first 10. And so I agree with a lot of what they were trying to do, and that's what I believe that we can, mm-hmm. that it's a living constitution, and it can be amended to the times.
I don't agree with that, but that's all right.
That's what I'm talking about in terms of we have to decide if it is, in fact, a living or a dead constitution.
It's an illusion, because what is really the country is being run by the courts that decide how we're going to do, and the politicians are throwing fake rules, fake mandates. And so what really matters is actually what the judges are going to rule and what China decides. China's running this country. They have their man in there, and they're putting together their strategies. I mean, just look at what happened with China and Iran. They went to Iran and said, listen, because Trump was sanctioning and cutting them off financially is really killing them. So China said, listen, we'll do your infrastructure and we'll do your computer tech and all those goodies. Just give us your oil. And they go to all these countries, Central America, South America, Africa, and wherever. And they say, you know, we'll give you infrastructure. We're building this big road and connection throughout all of Europe.
What is this?
In the Middle East. That's what China's doing. And they're taking over the South China. And they're putting up, they take all the islands out there, like by the Philippines and so forth, and they're putting little bases out there. And it's because they want to control, and they're buying up in America. They're buying up our companies. And so they just control everything, and that's what's happening right now with our economy and with our banking system. China is slowly gaining the power. So whatever we decide, it doesn't matter. It's like with the election. Who did the software? China. You know, where does this virus come from? Why are we locked down? China, right? Wuhan. So we have to really ask, what does China want us to do? Because the Constitution is not going to be enforced. Didn't they change the state constitutions the week of or the month of the elections? How can you do that? They did it. How come? Got to get rid of Orange Man. And that's what they did. They got him out of there. He did launch his own website, though, this week, and he's going to put together a media company. And you imagine, just think about this in America, because we're talking about Constitution. The biggest internet social media voice, Donald Trump, 88 million followers, doesn't have an account. And he was the president of the United States. Think about that one. You think we have freedom of speech when the number one social media voice in the country can't have an account on Twitter? on Instagram.
Because
right?
he's corrupt. Because he's corrupt.
It doesn't matter if he was corrupt. Who is he corrupt?
Well, here's the problem. Twitter's
no
a private company.
No
sedition. Twitter's a private company, and they can kick out whoever they want from there. And they said all the time when they kick out independent news medias, which they call fake news, you know, and people they don't like on Twitter, and they just kick them out, and then they always say, "Oh, it's a you know, they kick them out because it's a you know, it's a private company." And it's okay when they kick out a bunch of independent media stations, it's okay. But when they kick out Donald Trump, well, then that's a big deal.
Well, the point is that all these companies
have really sedition. He was bringing people together to overthrow the government. And
are
that,
you
and
sure?
He had his thing. Oh, big time. He had his three and a half years. He had his 3.5 years of on his Twitter and his whatever accounts. I don't even know because I don't deal with the computer because it's for stupid people. But the bottom line is that he had his web page or whatever for 3.5 years, and that was enough. I mean, he had a chance to do what he
can have.
Do, and he didn't do it, so he blew it.
So people went to the Capitol, took selfies for 2 hours, broke a couple windows. He tells them to go home peacefully. And they leave. You call that an insurrection? No buildings were burnt. They didn't run out there with guns and start shooting people down. In fact, they were the ones getting killed.
They didn't shoot.
Donald Trump said he was going to be there.
They sure did beat him with the poles and sticks. The people died. People haven't died since 2017. People died in this thing. People died in the Capitol.
Who died?
A couple of cops, a couple of people. They were shot right there in front of the camera.
The people protesting were shot.
Not the people outside protesting got shot. The people inside, they were breaking windows and trying to get in the courthouse. And as you see, the lady on the video, if you saw that video, the one that broke the window was trying to get into the last door, and she was shot.
The 18,000 people arrested for BLM protests that Kamala Harris says, this isn't going to stop, it's going to keep going, it should keep going? You think that's not insurrection? Seriously.
Well,
by the way, the
courthouse.
Seattle's still under siege. Portland? Yeah, they're still under siege.
The people in the courthouse were evacuated underground. They had to evacuate them underground, so they were fearing for their lives. So
nothing
they had to
was
evacuate.
To the tunnel, they had a tunnel underneath. By the way,
I live in Santa Monica. They shut down. They tore up downtown. They burned down Hollywood. I had to leave work. Are you kidding me? Washington D.C. They went back to business in 2 hours. They went and voted that night. That's not an insurrection. They would shut down the whole thing. They would have shot up the whole place. There would have been hundreds of people dead. That is so fake news. You have no validity to that statement at all. People left. Donald Trump didn't say to burn down anything. He didn't say to.
By the way, the backup of police officers took about like three. I remember it was about 3 or 4 hours to finally come. The backup, it took a long time. But I can guarantee you, had there been Black Lives Matter and Antifa there, there would have been thousands of police officers like there normally is during the Black Matters protest.
But there were
thousands
of
police officers.
Protesters are the police brothers and uncles and cousins. That's who was on the lawn. They were police people that were on the lawn. They were the family members.
There weren't enough police officers, and that backup never arrived when it should have arrived.
Look at the video.
They're climbing the wall.
Police officers are literally trying to beat them with the batons, and they're still forcing their way in. They literally, police officers had to back up. They had to literally back up. and get inside the building because they couldn't handle the mob anymore. They were outnumbered and out surrounded.
The police
officer. You could see that in the video.
The police are suing.
That's what happened at the
courthouse
when they were
seeing
fire.
But the police are suing.
Were you out of the country? Did your TV not work? Did you not watch the internet? Haven't you seen what they've done in Portland? They took over downtown.
Nobody's dead.
They took over the police station.
So property is more important than human life. Is that what you're saying?
No, because
people shot their own people
over there that were in those occupied areas. That were their own people that got shot.
Remember, people got raped and killed during the takeover?
Living document, real quick. Right now, we have an issue with not only the police, but the prosecutors and the justices. If there's a crime or whatever, they determine however they're going to rule on different things. Even though they have a jury, the judge will sentence and so forth. And that's not how it's supposed to work. And that's why it can't be a living document unless you want it to be that way. Because a living document can change with the times, as you were saying. And we can't do that because this kind of thinking has done what we have right now. The living document theory is why the Supreme Court fights are so intense, because the judges, all of them, the Supreme Court and lower courts, can interpret the Constitution however they see fit. And we can't do that when they sit on the bench. They have to read it how they want to. And that's why right now we have a thing with conservative and with Democrat and progressive and liberal judges, and we want to pack the courts to make it even, so we have even conservatives, even Democrats, and it's not supposed to be political, but it's turned into being political because there are certain people that see it as a living document that gives them that power to interpret the laws rather than to uphold the laws.
Right, that's why we need to tear down some of the law, because that's why this is going to be so difficult. The constitutional convention, because it's going to change millions of laws.
Yeah, I do hate the fact that the mainstream media has a tunnel vision. The mainstream media has a tunnel vision. When somebody gets killed and the protesters, set a building on fire, they videotape the building on fire millions of times and talk about it and tell stories about it and do everything about this one building on fire, and hardly ever cover the guy that got shot and got killed, right? It seems like the building's more important than the man's life, And then, and then everybody else starts talking about, oh, the protesters burned the building and, you're bad people and blah, 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 blah. And nobody talks about the guy that got killed, and everybody wants to talk about the building. So the building should not be more important than the man's life.
That's
exactly
right. The guy who broke the law that the police were called out on, that resisted and forced an issue of to get attacked or to get shot and killed. And meanwhile, when they released Derek Chauvin and dismissed the case because they're going for instead of going for manslaughter or a negligence, they're going to go for that he was the cause of the death, when probably it was the fentanyl and the combination. The point is, they're going to probably dismiss the case. Now you want to see an insurrection? You're going to see the people light up the country. And then you'll see what real insurrection is. And you're not going to say a damn word. How come? Because you don't care. You don't mind if the city's burned for 6 or 7 months. But people come in and do selfies at the White House for 2 hours and leave. That's an insurrection. And then you're a domestic terrorist. That's when people don't go to the White House, because if you do anything, if I even went over to say to, if I put up a sign, I just put a flag or a Trump thing in front of Hunter Biden's house, I'd be arrested by the Secret Service as a domestic terrorist. But I can go and burn down freaking L.A., And for BLM and Antifa, and you guys are going to be
all, a lot of those people got caught and went to jail. They were arrested and went to jail. There were a lot of arrests. Even people that were standing around doing nothing got arrested. People that were standing around doing nothing were arrested. There were a lot of arrests. Trust me.
In Portland. In LA, they're white people.
They got bailed out.
just the people that were
fight.
People got 100-year sentences. That's what they're throwing at them. But the people at BLM, celebrities were paying their way out. Just look at the Post, Melissa Lawn, all these people. Oh, here's $100,000. We'll let you go. Not a problem, right?
They're mostly white. And that's the problem, is that these people are speaking for a particular organization, and they don't have the faintest idea what the organization is because they can't live that life. They haven't experienced what those experiences are. Black Lives Matter is not a black, exclusively black organization. First of all, it's generally very weak and fragmented. But the main thing is that it is comprised not of black people, but of everybody, and mostly white. So,
well, black
it doesn't matter. We're just talking in general as far as
but we're
people
talking
that got
about the violence.
For doing
he's
people
talking,
things
talking,
and the other ones that did. You had a police, an ex-police officer that was shot for a flat-screen TV. We didn't hear much about him. On the news, why
didn't but most of the violence, a lot of the violence, especially the early violence, was perpetrated by right-wing Aryan Asian.
How many people are white? 85% of the population. So you got to figure it's 85%
the
of the crime be white.
They're promoting the violence.
Look,
though.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what organization you follow. They all have their own protesters. Even your Donald Trump
correct.
Organization, they got protesters. They have many protesters. They came into, federal building and smashed it up and came inside. And they took pictures with the police officers. A lot of them were mostly cool with the police officers. I liked a lot of them. They kind of had the same, the same kind of thought, So, just taking pictures. You try to see the Black Lives Matter hang out with the cops and take pictures. They'll get beat with the baton just by getting close with the camera. But here's an interesting fact. Okay.
Have you been out there protesting?
Yes.
Trump supporters. I've seen the BLM. I've been out there at Trump. Rallies at the Beverly Hills, and the people were peaceful, like 5,000 or 6,000. You get 200 punks come down, they're dressed in black with their little masks, and they're throwing bottles at the police, and they're flipping off people, and they're walking right down the middle of the road like they own it, breaking every law, and no one touches them, not even the police, because they don't want a lawsuit. But the Trump people are on the lawn, they're following the orders. Just look at all the Trump rallies. Look up all of them.
Here.
Wind them
let me tell you something. Like I said, the mainstream media has tunnel vision, and the mainstream media only likes to talk about these.
Reparations. She claimed it was reparations because they looted the city.
So I was answering the question to John. So the mainstream media has tunnel vision. And, they only like to talk about the protesters setting stuff on fire and breaking stuff like that. But they never talk about the issue. The Black Lives Matter organization was trying to stop police brutality, was trying to make a change for the better, And so you have these individual people, burning stuff and throwing trash cans over, maybe breaking some windows. And that's what the mainstream media has tunnel vision. And then they got people... people that they only want to talk about that. That's the only want to talk about, John. So, John, why are you only talking about these protests or burning stuff? John, why don't you talk about what the organization was trying to go for? What the purpose was of the organization, not what the protesters were doing, but what was the purpose of the organization? Talk about that.
I don't know, because people are still shooting each other in Chicago and all these other cities. If they really cared, then they would care to stand up against that.
Yes, that is the thing. That is the thing. The mainstream media has tunnel vision, and a lot of people, you guys don't know much about what the organization stands for and what changes they're trying to do. You don't know much about that, but you do know a lot about the protesters setting a garbage can on fire, breaking windows. You know a lot about that, but you don't know a lot about what the organization stands for. And let me tell you one thing for sure. The organization like Black Lives Matter does not stand for breaking windows and throwing trash cans over and setting buildings on fire. That's a guarantee. They do not stand for that. They never did and they never will.
That's not true.
Well, actually,
they want to attain their goals by any means possible. That was on their page. Black Lives Matter, Inc.
People associate
themselves with Black Lives Matter, Inc. They're behind Black Lives Matter, yes, for the things that they stand up for, but not Black Lives Matter, Inc. They're different. Those are the ones that are causing trouble.
And look at the permanent damage. The Capitol staff, the next day, they fix a couple windows. They're good to go. We're talking about cities decimated. We're talking about businesses looted, destroyed, black minority businesses, stores, independent owners shut down for months. It's devastated, wiped out. Are you kidding me? The Trump rallies are peaceful. Go ahead, find, show me all the burning buildings from Trump rallies or from the Capitol. You won't find any. There wasn't any. Go ahead and find people throwing water bottles with ice or bricks. They're very – the BLM, they always had groups of people come out with their vans, and they got the bricks, and they got the umbrellas, and they're ready to how blind the police with their lasers pointers.
The Trump rally people are armed with assault rifles, by the way. They're huge gun fanatics, and they're all armed to the teeth, by the way, okay?
Nope, they didn't confiscate any guns.
They're not Black Lives Matter walking with some sticks and a bottle.
You're talking about 3%ers, and they have the right to carry those arms, and they didn't shoot anyone, did they? Have you seen any shootings?
What are you talking about? The big Trump rally, when they Trump. Now, here's the thing. Those Trump rally big supporters, organizations, by the way, are all mostly very wealthy. They have a lot of money. They're not poor, broke people that are joining Black Lives Matter. Like, the Trump rally, literally, if you look at the Trump rally when they were supporting Donald Trump, they actually did a marathon with their yachts. They cruised around with their yachts. There were like literally thousands of yachts cruising around. Mm-hmm. In fact, here's a report that's only 1 minute long, and I want you to hear. I want you to hear this.
What's wrong? They're trying to break the world record for the largest boat parade in honor of President Trump, and they might just do it. Currently, the Guinness Book of World Records states that the current world record for the largest boat parade was achieved back in 2014 in Malaysia with 1,180 boats. But organizers of today's parade said they're confident that at least on paper, they have that record beat. They told Fox 13 they had over 1,600 voters registered to be in today's parade, but with people registering up until the last minute and with organizers encouraging voters to join in along the route, they told us there's a good possibility there's at least 2,000 boats out on the water for today's event.
People are coming from all over, like they're coming from the East Coast.
So you have 2,000 voters of Donald Trump registers in their yachts. You know, most of them were in their yachts. Big line cruisers and fancy boats. These are Donald Trump supporters cruising around in over 2,000 yachts, breaking records, and they all have a lot of money. Now, try to see the Black Lives Matter cruising around in yachts. Try to see the Black Lives Matter cruising around Rolls Royce and Bentleys and Ferraris and Lamborghinis and doing a protest with those vehicles.
They're mostly all poor
people. Donald Trump supporters organizations are very wealthy and well connected.
Oh no,
it's not
about
just an organization. Each vote is an organization, and it doesn't matter how much money that they have. Are you jealous? Obviously, Black Lives Matter had raised $90 million last year, so you know they're not hurting.
Google, Yahoo, Adidas, Nike, the National Football League, all the millionaire people, LeBron James. They're poor people, the poor black men, these poor black millionaires. Man, they're so Captain, what, he made $26 million deal or whatever. What a sacrifice. Are you kidding me? And people with money have the right to do whatever they want. And these aren't.
It's not about the money. It's about the connections. They have the connections, and they're able to get the jobs and the money. A lot of black people have hard times even getting a job.
No, big corporate, big pharma, they're all BLM. Are you kidding me? All the majors. They're all at Hollywood. Oh,
and
my goodness.
Why would Black Lives Matter decline to name any of their prominent donors if they were on the up and up? I mean, you don't just come up with $90 million, you know, unless you know people, unless you're connected. Only 10% of their donations came from everyday people like you and me.
Don? It sounded like he hanged up. I heard somebody hanged up.
Yeah, no. My phone was dead. I was trying to get it recharged. So when I
see.
No, well, it's pretty much 11:30 anyway, and I was just wondering if anyone's ready to go go to bed.
I think it's time we can continue discussion next week. And in closing, I will say, enjoy the America we have before they put up that Chinese flag, and they immunize you and they microchip you, and big corporate will enjoy that. BLM will be very happy with your little mask on. And those who want freedom, those who want the Constitution, well, you know, enjoy whatever we have left of it. Maybe there's a chance. I don't know. We'll see.
Anyone else?
Albert? Oh, you want me to go? Okay, I'll go.
Go.
It's not a money issue per se, because if you know the right people and they want to sponsor you, then there's no harm in that, you know, as long as it's done legally. And so campaign funds, all right, fine. No problems there. Joe Biden actually outraised Donald Trump. So did Hillary, as far as their corporate donations, Wall Street donations, and that can be verified. 35% of $20.2 billion came from corporations and foundations to the Black Lives Matter. So you might want to look into that, as far as, you know, they're doing good things with some of the money, but they still were left with $60 million after they gave a little pieces out here and there for grants and so forth to help the communities, or their communities, which is fantastic. That's a good thing. But so they spent, what was it, $30 million if they were left with $60 because they had $90 million. Anyway, back to you.
Well, I'll just go real quick. I just want to make sure that everybody does their part. We have to do this together. This is a new day, in essence. As a Democrat, I do not agree with a lot of the things the Democrats do or have been saying, or the crime that they've done over some of the things that could have been done a lot better, like the impeachment trials. But we're in this together, and this polarization is driving us batty. The stock market can't get any traction because they don't like uncertainty. The oil markets are going crazy because we have become energy independent, and the rest of the world has got to find its way through. When we talk about climate, it's right in your face. But, just like the media circus of all these goofballs running in the Capitol, and they weren't just, it was not just pushed off. This thing was serious. So, you know, we're living in kind of a, I don't know what we would call it, because it's neither idyllic or hellish. It's just, I guess, life. And we gotta get our stuff together, or else we're gonna be, one of those planets that's just going up in a ball of flames. That's it. All right, Albert, he's gone.
I think he had to go to his BLM rally, burn down some stores.
and see the lesbians, and then the gay Proud Boys. Oh, okay, that's a match made in heaven. Match made in heaven.
You guys have a happy Easter. It was good talking with you. Thank you for having me on the show. And
no problem.
Good conversation.
Anytime, you bet, okay?
Thank you.
We'll have Jane schedule another one by next week, okay?
Sounds good.
Until they microchip you, and then you'll be asking for the Proud Boys to defend your right to your constitution.
Well, that's the whole point, John. We have 40% of whites, or white males, refuse to get the shot, and we've got about the same black people in general. So, see, we're on the same page.
Yeah.
We're in the same room. So
you're so focused on white people, you're missing the yellow man and the orange man who is protecting us from yellow man.
Yellow man got mad, and then now here we are. You just said Chinese control us, and so they do when they can get a virus and then send it all over the world because they're mad at one man. Bringing on terrorists, which in fact killed America.
He stood up against them. Yeah, see, that's the thing. The one man who stands against it, you want him out of the way so the yellow man can totally steamroll us.
No, it's not the reason. It's because he's a lying, cheating asshole. I agree with a lot of what Donald Trump wanted to do. He just wanted to put money in his own pocket instead of divvying it up with the populace. That's the problem.
He made money before he got to White House. The guys you follow make their money in the White House. Your Camis and your JoJos and your Nancy Pelosi's, Nancy Pelosi's, they make their money off of you.
But
he's a mafia.
He's a mafia don. He's a mafia Nazi don. That is not a good combination.
The Mafia
he's
Don
not perfect,
gave you the greatest
but he didn't
employment.
Steal anything from the American
but,
people, like
oh,
the
sure
other
did.
Politicians.
Jobs. Gave you jobs and oil, and you didn't want that. Instead, you want to be locked down with your mask. You want businesses
the
shut
Mitch
down.
Mitch McConnell.
It's called kickbacks.
You have Sleazy, Lindsey Graham.
Oh, and you want people coming from the border, too.
It's called
John Thune, Republican senator in Big Ag's pocket.
People don't know about him. Another $2 trillion going to just sink
they're
the whole economy.
In everybody's pocket. And everybody's in everybody's pocket. There are no – that's what John doesn't understand. You can't understand. There is no distinction in the political parties in reality. One, there's always something, a slice that that one party wants – that they can't explicitly say because they'll seem like they're going against their constituents. And then there's always something that the other party is going
to
want.
And then
they
have backdoor meetings where they negotiate and have coffee and beer together and laugh at us because we're buying everything that they're saying and they're making their negotiations to get what they want.
True,
right. Sure,
they may be aligned that way, but Trump was an outsider because you can't say there was no difference because it's totally different. He was shutting down China. He was bringing in oil. He is supporting gun rights. So you can't say, oh, he's the opposite, but he's the same. No, he's the opposite. He's counterpoint.
That's why they wanted him out. It's because he
was
opposite.
That's why they wanted him out.
So you come to the point.
The thing, John, you're talking about. Aren't taken lightly. Those things that he did are historic, changing. And the things that the several things that he did do, made basically by executive order, they could be construed as good for one segment of society, but for the other segment, you know, then it's the worst thing in the world. It's deadly. The thing is, just look at the figures that the one percenters have gained like 28% of the wealth since the pandemic. That is a huge number.
That's because people buy their products. You know, they can't help it. People buy their product, right? I'm going to make money. But, yeah, you know, as far as Trump goes, they wanted him out. He's done treaties. He's done trade deals that are stuck in the books. But you're right. He did do a lot on executive order. And he, I don't even know if he could have pushed anything through or not. There were, that tax thing was about the only thing he was able to really get through. And everything else was by executive order, and that was a disappointment. And there were some things that shouldn't have been an executive order that he overreached. But all in all, I think he did a really good job.
Well, he did all that he could do. There's no other way he could do stuff.
People around, how could you say that he did a good job when every, and my contention is that he's a crook, but every person in his cabinet, every person in his office is in jail.
I'm talking about his policies that were implemented.
You know what, I'm talking about he could have been president again if he didn't have such character defects. He could be president again.
That's the only way he got to be president. If he came to ask like you guys did,
if he can't even spell, then he's got a problem, perceptually.
Give me a break.
Perceptually.
You're going to pick on little things like I can't spell either. Does that make me an idiot? No.
Actually, there were more black men that voted
for Donald Trump in 2020 than they had for Barack Obama. And that's a statistic that can be looked up. So, you know.
That's because Barack Obama was going to win in the last fight. A lot of people said, forget it. We don't want to vote. It doesn't matter.
How you justify it, the fact is that's the numbers. The numbers reveal themselves. Why would they? They didn't have to come out and vote for Donald Trump, but they did.
He got beat.
Because they wanted him to win.
He's a loser, like he calls our veterans. Like he calls.
They wanted him to win. Okay, so you're telling me that the black men that voted for Donald Trump in overwhelming numbers are idiots. Okay, are you listening, America?
We were going to try and bring people together. I never said idiots, even though they are. I never said they were idiots. I'm just saying he lost. He's a loser. That's the reason he hasn't been out, because his ego is beaten up so badly.
And by the way, he's going to take him on again, and I think he's going to win. But we'll see.
That's fine. If he deserves,
he already won the election. You know they stole it. You know that. You don't even have to question it. You know.
Okay, they stole it. That's because the white people are thieves. White people are vicious thieves. They're violent people. Everybody knows
that. What are you talking about?
I said the violent part of BLM is the white people. That's what I'm saying.
Right.
And John, we have to worry about the next election because Joe Biden said there may not even be a Republic. In his press conference. It's like, what does that mean?
No, because the Republican Party is destroying, they're imploding. They don't even know what they're doing.
That's what the news media wants you to believe, because I tell you what, behind the scenes, it's stronger than ever.
Behind the scenes, they're one of the most well-organized machines in the history of man. But the thing is that their numbers are dwindling because they're not human. They're not making babies anymore. They're going to be by... You know, we're very well onto a minority majority.
Oh, I don't